welcome the DG for Treasury and other officials who were not part of the morning sessions. The morning session, I'm Dikeledi Mahlangu, the chairperson for Appropriations Committee in the NCOP. I'm with my colleague here, my comrade, my brother, Brafan May, Honorable Siso Buteles Osheng. We are left with one item, and we are happy, DG, that you could make it. We had very interesting engagement in the morning, and you were mentioned somehow that you might be watching us, and I didn't believe it because I thought for you not to be here, you were busy, so you could not watch us. But there's nothing wrong. That was done by anybody. We just did our work. Rest assured. I'll hand over to you, DG, as the senior manager on Treasury. We are on the item, is the last but one. Actually, it's the last item because others are just the sub-items. The presentation by National Treasury on the 2019 Appropriation Bill. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. Thank you very much for inviting us once more to take you through the Appropriation Bill and matters that we have discussed this morning. Again, apologies that I could not make earlier the meeting earlier. We will continue where we ended, Chair, by Dr. Modise, just continuing with the Appropriation Bill as is. Part of it talks to the special, or call it Section 16 allocations that we want to bring to the committee's attention and deal with it. I will touch on that insofar as ESCOM is concerned, but currently the DDG responsible one probably will continue with where she ended this morning. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You can go on.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm just going to take the committee through the Appropriation Bill. Basically, this bill comes from the Mines Bill Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Amendment Act. So what it basically says is that the committees on finance will look at the fiscal framework and the revenue proposal. After that has been adopted, the second step is the Division of Revenue Bill, where the funds are distributed to national, provinces and local government. And then today now we are here to look at the Appropriation Bill, where we'll be looking at how the funds at the main budget level have been distributed within the different departments and boards. So the Appropriation Bill is just a legislation that provides for the appropriation of money by Parliament from the National Revenue Fund. So the spending is subjected to the PFMA and the provisions of the Appropriation Bill itself. For transfers to the national, sub-national, as I said, it's the Division of Revenue. The committees on appropriations may not consider or may consider amendments to the Appropriation Bill, may not consider amendments to the Appropriation Bill before the Division of Revenue is passed, but any amendments to the Appropriation Bill must be consistent with the adopted fiscal framework and the Division of Revenue Bill. So basically this committee has the powers to reallocate the funding within the existing framework. The Appropriation Bill was tabled in Parliament together with the Budget Review, and that was in February the 28th. Basically, we had to ask for the revival of the bill, and this was done in June because of the move between the 5th and the 6th Parliament. Prior to the appropriation bills being promulgated, the department can spend. However, the provision is very specific. They can only spend less than 45% of the previous year's budget, and this is up to July. So the bill has to be approved by the end of July. So these are just some of the responsibilities of the committee. I just pulled it out from one of the documents in Parliament. It just outlines what the Appropriations Committee or the Committee on Appropriations responsibilities are. But I think for us what is important is that the committee can make amendments to the appropriation bill that we will be presenting today. The structure of the bill, basically it focuses or is divided by votes and by main divisions, but what is also important is that the purpose is set out for each vote, the program and the transfers and subsidies to national department within the vote. The allocations, it was easier to categorize them according to current payment, which is the compensation of employees, goods and services, interest, but we also separate transfers and subsidies, capital for payment for capital assets, payments for capital assets, and payment for financial assets. And then we have a very thick book, which is the explanatory memorandum to the appropriation bill. We did send through the link when we send it when we send the document to the secretariat, and this just shows what is covered in the big document. So just by means of the background, and the chairperson touched on it earlier today when he was asking us how do we deal with the underspending vis-a-vis the debt vis-a-vis, how do we do this? So as background to this appropriation bill as it is, the first thing is that the 2019 budget, it outlines a series of economic and fiscal measures that are intended to move the economy into a new trajectory. The central policies still stay, and it's to accelerate inclusive growth and to create jobs. However, there's been some priorities in the budget, and the biggest one was we have to narrow the budget deficit and to stabilize the debt, and you will see that there are proposals to reduce some of the spending items. Because of the issues in the electricity sector, we had to support the restructuring of the electricity sector and to reduce the immediate risk that ESCOM poses in, to the economy and the public finances. But the DG, as mentioned, he will be looking at the ESCOM issues, and also we had to look at trying to strengthen the private sector investment and other areas. So basically in terms of spending and more targeted to the appropriation bill, there were baseline reductions in spending of 53 billion over the next years, 50.3 billion over the next years, and about half of this money relates to the compensation of employees' budget. But we also had to, of the savings that we've identified, we had to reallocate money into the three categories. The first one was ESCOM reconfiguration, so the proposal is to allocate 69 million over the next 3 years to ESCOM. The infrastructure fund proposal will allocate 5 billion, and then for the census, which would be in 2021, the proposal there is to allocate 1.3 billion. The contingency reserve, we had to increase it because there were pressures coming from state-owned companies, and the three that were mentioned in the budget review were SABC, the South African Airways, as well as DNEL. So they are the three institutions where we would be considering the risk that they may pose, and also funding that is allocated. And in the book we also say that any financial support that is agreed on will be raised from the sale of non-core assets, and it will be excluded from the expenditure ceiling. This is as in the budget review. The above spending adjustment, they increase the main budget non-interest expenditure about 25 billion. But I think, Chairperson, if you can allow us when we do the workshop, we can also explain some of these terms that we have in the presentation. But basically, this is just an overview or the summary of the budget that is underlying the appropriations bill as we're looking at it today. So just in summary, Chairperson and honourable members, the appropriation bill for 2019-20, it proposes a spending of 900 billion. The division of this spending, basically you're looking at compensation of employees, where it will take 170 billion or 19% of the total that will be allocated. Goods and services about 8%. Transfers and subsidies take the most out of the money, which is 68%. And then payment for capital assets would be 2%, and then payment for financial assets will also be 2%. So all in all, the biggest component of the appropriation bill in terms of economic classification would be 68%, and that goes to transfers and subsidies. Now, if we zoom in into the departments that contribute to these economic classifications, so firstly we look at the compensation of employees. Now, it's not surprising that the peace and security departments tend to be labor intensive, and hence they contribute a lot in terms of compensation of employees. So if you look at the police, of the total, police budget on compensation accounts for 45% of this amount of the 170 billion in terms of compensation. Then defense and military veterans, 17%, correctional services, another 11%, and justice and constitutional development, they take about 6%, which is 9.5 billion. But you also have the Department of Higher Education and Training, where mainly this is the salaries of over 16,000 TVET lecturers, and also community and education training or CET colleges. So these are the departments that have large compensation budgets. Then the second one, when we look at goods and services, so the departments that are here account for 83%, and the main one would be the peace and security departments, but you have other departments which have large goods and services. So just for example, if you look at the basic education, the main reason why their goods and services is so large here, about 1.9 billion, is basically because of the printing and the distributing of workbooks for grade R to grade 9 learners, and this is about 1.2 billion of the amount. If you look at the security departments, they spend most of their money on computers, operating leases and fleet services that's specific to police, but you also have contractors for maintenance and or of main weapon systems and property payments, that would be Defence Force. And if you look at the correctional facilities, of course their major goods and services spending would be nutritional services for the inmates and also property payments. And then for justice will be computers, because they need to make sure that the systems are correlated. So for corporate governance, the biggest spending on goods and services is mainly for community works program. And if you look at the rural development and land reform, their goods and services is mainly for administrative support and also for the entire functioning of the department. And then you get some departments where environmental affairs, where they are spending, is mostly for the expanded public works program, but also you have other small spending there. And then home affairs and DECO are the other ones, where home affairs main spending is computers, leases and property payments, but for DECO, because of the business, is more of travel and subsistence. Just looking quickly into the transfers and subsidies. the main department that gets most of the transfers and subsidies, which is not surprising, would be social development, where it accounts for 30% of the total transfers in the 900 billion of the appropriation bill allocation. And then you get COCTA, where they get 14%, 85 billion, but this is mostly the funds that they transfer to local government. Higher education, the 79 billion or 13%, that would be what they transfer for NFSAS, the higher education. Transport, health, national treasury, basic education also transfer a relative number of grants. Just looking at the institutions and how much they get of the total, you can see that constitutional institutions, the one that gets most of the transfers would be the Independent Electoral Commission, where of the transfers to constitutional institutions, it accounts for 60%. Then you get the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, where it gets 14%, and the Public Protector receives 10% of the transfers to constitutional institutions. Then if you look at the national public entities, which are Schedule 3A entities, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme receives 34% of the transfers to these type of institutions. The South African National Roads Agency, SANRAL, receives 21 billion, which is 23% of the transfers, and the rest of the institution get some marginal transfers. And if you look at national government business enterprises, the biggest there would be PRASA, which gets 83% of the total transfers that we transfer to these entities. So, Chairperson and honourable members, the explanations basically just moving in terms of the different departments and why they would have such large transfers. For higher education and training, mainly the money goes to the 26 public universities. Some of the money goes to NFSAS and TVET colleges, but also there's subsidies for public technical and TVET colleges, which is about 5.6 billion. For basic education, the major transfer would be the education infrastructure grants, and this goes to provinces for the construction of new schools as well as the maintenance of existing schools. That allocation is 10.5 billion. But we also transfer 7.2 billion for the National School Nutrition Program grant, and this also goes to different provinces. But we also transfer about 1.2 billion for NFSAS for over 12,000 Funza Lushaka bursaries for the prospective teachers. And then looking at COCTA, as I said, I won't spend a lot of time on this, but this is basically the local government equitable share, which is 69 billion, but also the municipal infrastructure grant of close to 15 billion. For transport, apart from SANRAL, 21.3, we have provincial road maintenance grant, which takes about 11.5 billion. And as I said, PRASA, but we also have the two grants in public finance, public transport, which are the public transport operations grant and the public transport network grant. For the national treasury, the 23 billion basically is split as 2.9 billion goes to the post-retirement medical scheme. We transfer money to the South African Revenue Services because it falls under the national treasury. We transfer 4.2 billion to the Secret Service, and there's just other small transfers that we do. And just moving on to the payment of capital assets, the departments that tend to be more involved in infrastructure is your water and sanitation, which takes about 25% of this budget. Police, which takes about 22%, basic education takes about 12%. But I think, honourable members and chairpersons, what is important here is that the budget itself is very small. So this is 2% of the total 900. So if we had to have a balanced budget, one would rather see an increase in the capital assets because you want to focus more on infrastructure than on operations. But the department that receives most of this money would be water and sanitation as well as police. Then we have the payment for capital assets. So basically public enterprises, the proposal is for 17 billion, that is 79% of the capital of the financial budget, national treasury 4.6, and then human settlement, 50 million, which is small. And the explanation there is that the 17 is for ESCOM, for the debt obligations and recap. The human settlement, it was just 50 million, and this was provided for the recapitalization of the National Housing Finance Corporation. The National Treasury mainly is the payment of the New Development Bank and also our share in the World Bank. So mainly it was just the payment of the New Development Bank. Then in the appropriation bill, Chairperson and Honourable Members, there's items that are specifically and exclusively appropriated, and this amount basically may only be used for the purpose as indicated, and unless the amount or purpose is amended, so if they want to change, then they have to come to Parliament to ask for approval and they come to this committee. So basically these items, and we're going to spend a lot of time looking at these items when we do the workshop, it would be all your conditional grants. So the departments are not allowed to use conditional grants for any other purposes. The compensation of employee money, they can't use this for any other purpose. The compensation linked to the capital project. So basically when you mark an item specifically and exclusively appropriated, you're trying to protect the, so you're guarding against department using these funds for other purposes during the year. So if they want to move the funds or via the funds, they have to come back and ask for permission from Parliament. You also have funding allocated to constitutional institutions where we don't touch, and you also have other commitment that binds the National Revenue Fund. And these items basically will be the rolling stock in PRASA and also the subsidies that we give to SANRAL since the new dispensation in 2015. Chairperson, in the appropriation bill, we have a table that says basically in the tight budget, you have instances where you have to move money from one item to the other item. So this slide just shows you where we had to reduce the funding and the proposal of where the funding went. So basically just looking at the largest possible or positive reallocations, the department that got the most money was the Department of Public Enterprises, and this was because of ESCOM, it's 17.7 billion. Transport, as I mentioned earlier, SANRAL did get 2 billion. The City of Cape Town, and this was through the public transport network conditional grants, and this was for the phase two of the integrated transport network, received 354 million. If you look at the basic education, 700 million was allocated to the school infrastructure backlog indirect grant, and this was mainly focusing on eradicating the feed latrines, but also 200 million was added to the education infrastructure grant, and this was to deal with the schools that were damaged in the KZN as a result of the flood. Then we still have money that was allocated to COCTA, just close to a billion, and this was to create the integrated urban development of conditional grants. Some money was given to the South African Revenue Services to capacitate SARS, and this was close to 400 million. Then for the health, we also allocated some money there just to create the new human resource capacitation conditional grant, and then we also added some money for the national health insurance. But this basically was targeted to deal with the Limpopo Academic Hospital and to improve some of the two hospitals in Pietersburg and Mangaung hospitals. For trade, we added 300 million, and this was for the IDC, Industrial Development Corporation, and this was to try and increase the uptake of the clothing and textile incentive support. And then just lastly, Chairperson and Honourable Members, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fishery received 271 million and this was given to the land bank and this was for the blended financing to try and boost the black farmers. And then justice and constitutional development, we had to find funding to fund the judicial commission of inquiry into allegations of state capture, and that amount was 272.9 million. Chairperson, with your permission, may I please ask my DG to go through the ESCOM presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will take over from here. The Minister of Finance in February announced 23 billion, 69 billion over 3 years, indicated 230 billion over 10 years, support to ESCOM. And at the time, the idea and the intention was to service...
Sorry, DJ, just to inform members, the latest document that we received just now, after lunch. Thank you. You can go on.
Thank you, Chair. So we then, the intention was to, for ESCOM to service debt and also to meet debt redemption of requirements, and as such wanted to make resources available for such. The idea was that this will go through the normal process until the appropriation bill is finalized in end of July, as Mamfu was saying earlier on. But unfortunately, what then happened is that we obviously had to, you know, speed up the process, and I'll explain that later as to what I mean. So, and at the time, the numbers was that, you know, it was 23 billion per year for 3 years at least. That was the number that we were working on. The need at the time was 150 billion, and amortized over a 10-year period. That's where we came to the 230 billion. So, we did not. And I'll explain again later as to why, you know, at the time we did not submit a special appropriation for consideration, and because at the time there was no indication that more money will be required. Slide number 3. Now, they had cash flow challenges after announcing the budget and before the appropriation bill was finalized. In terms of their cash flow requirements, in terms of their funding requirements, one of the key, and we explained in the memorandum that we sent to Parliament, one of the key funders, or call them creditors, was the China Development Bank, which committed to disburse almost 7 billion to ESCOM by the 25th of March. But unfortunately, they were able to timelessly execute the drawdown as per their own plans. And it therefore called for us to do something and to make money available on the 29th of March. Now, in order to avert this, we had to always look at options available to us at the time in order to make sure that ESCOM is sustainable over time. We have got a facility with the central bank that we created a few years ago, Corporation for Public Deposits, that, again, to use funds from the specific, and it did not meet the requirements at the time. And what we then did was to then approach existing lenders, some of them being Absa Capital in particular, which was able to provide bridging facilities on an emergency basis, and we then had to they make that amount available. At the time it was just 3 billion to just make sure that they are able to meet some of their creditor obligation at the end of that month, and it was backed by a guarantee. But the bigger issue, and for the committee in particular, is then the Section 16 of the PFMA and invocation thereof. So we all know that it's very clear in terms of how the Minister of Finance can use funds from this as per this particular provision. At the time, obviously, we were worried that this may have negative consequences for the fiscus and for ESCOM, and we had to make interventions. The Section 16 allocations was part of the 23 billion allocated in the, announced in the budget, and we it was money already that is appropriated, and that's part of the bill that is in front of you for consideration. Bullet number 4 is very clear in terms of what the PFMA says about the Minister of Finance and the possible use of the funds thereof, that he can authorize the use of funds from the National Revenue Fund to defray expenditure of an exceptional nature, which is currently not provided for and which cannot, without serious prejudice to the public interest, be postponed to a future parliamentary appropriation of funds. And it was on those bases that we did that. Section 16.2 of the PFMA limits the amount that the minister can authorize in emergency 2% of the annual national budget. And that amount, the 2% total was 17.652 billion, meaning that we have exhausted for the financial year any possibility of future use of Section 16 provisions, because we essentially have used the maximum allowable amount in terms of current legislation. The use of emergency powers to transfer these funds was necessitated by the entity's net cash flow requirements that could not wait for parliamentary approval, as I said. As per the requirements, the minister then on the 16th of April wrote letters and reports to Parliament and the Auditor General on the use of such funds, because Section 16.4A of the Act states that an amount authorized in terms of Section 16 must be reported to Parliament and the AG within 14 days, and I think we did that, and we can obviously make memoranda available, or the Secretariat has access to documents that you can always make available to the new committee. To date, we have transferred 13.5 billion. I'm looking at slide number 6. We have transferred 13.5 billion of the 17.652 that was approved. The disbursement of the 4 billion remaining, obviously, will be in accordance with the cash flow requirements of ESCOM, so we haven't exhausted that. The disbursement of the remainder of the 23 is envisaged to happen after the normal parliamentary process has been followed, meaning the balance between 23 and 17.652 will be obviously made available after this process that has started now, whereby the bill, the appropriation bill, is then dealt with by the committee and various other parliamentary processes. Until then, it's assented into law, as Mampo said, by the 31st of July. Treasury and the public enterprise continues to work closely on ESCOM Treasury to monitor the company's daily cash flow requirements. These engagements are meant to assist ESCOM as the company continues to raise its identified funding in accordance with its funding plan. And we all know that the failure of the ESCOM to secure drawdowns and existing resources would mean that additional funding would be needed in the future. So maybe let me pause here and say, explain ESCOM to the committee in context. We are not mentioning the special appropriation bill deliberately for the purpose of this process, because that is going to come later, as the President announced in the State of the Nation address the other day, that a special appropriation will be passed in Parliament, whereby we then would have then give more resources to ESCOM than what already in this appropriation bill, which is 29 billion per year for the next 3 years. So we will be coming to Parliament when government is ready with the appropriation bill to actually request for more resources to actually fund ESCOM. And that, again, we anticipate that it should happen before the end of July. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, let me take this opportunity to acknowledge and welcome the Deputy Minister. Our first meeting. I don't know if we'll always have you in our meetings. We are honored to have you in the meeting. We were told that you might join us later, and we appreciate your presence. And because it's our first meeting, I can't confirm if this will always happen. I want to abuse these powers for now and allow you, Deputy Minister, to greet the members of the committee, because they meet you for the first time.
No, that was on a lighter note.
DM, you can be comfortable and sit down.
And sit down, okay. No, thanks, Chair, and thanks for welcoming me. I'm delighted to be joining the team, and I will always avail myself to come and account and explain what we're trying to do for our people through the National Treasury. For whatever reason, if I'm not able to come, it will be for good reason, but I am committed to work with the team because it's only through this committee that we'll be able to see our blind spots as National Treasury, and those blind spots, if they are identified and they are brought to our attention, will always be a better National Treasury, and having a better National Treasury means that we'll have a better South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and on a lighter note, I'll say thank you, my principal. Only you can understand why you have that title, Principal Masol. Members, I'm going to identify you and give you numbers because we are still trying to know each other. It will be difficult to attach names to the faces. Can we raise hands, those who want to be part of the discussion? I'll start from here, number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, number six, lastly, number seven, my chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to start here. The manifesto talks about us having to make sure that the state plays an interventional role in its execution of its task to improve the lives of our people. Now, I want to come to the area under the slide presented earlier on health. Where mentioned is made of allocation of 247 million. I just want to check because you know the price of medicine it has been skyrocketing in the country, such that now there is a symbiotic relation between the National Health Insurance and the pharmaceutical company. We can't talk outside about National Health Insurance outside the bringing in the issue of the state pharmaceutical company. It has to be there. But I just want to check whether that issue of pharmaceutical company, because it's an old issue that we have been talking about, it's well expressed also in the manifesto. That is it part of this 247 million, or if not there, it has to reflect, because there is a high contestation of the private sector when you talk about the National Health Insurance. So outside the understanding of the implementation of that or establishment of pharmaceutical company, it will be problematic for us to see the NHI rolling out without any funds. And also want to check with the Treasury, how does the issue of the NDP express that, because it's one of the priorities of the NDP, how does the Treasury give it content, because going to be very key to understand, because it's one of the priorities when you talk about the NDP. How does the Treasury give that a context, just to understand, because it's one of the key priorities. On the issue of jobs, job creation is one of the key priority as well, but there has to be a clear breakdown in terms of, you know, for us to understand in terms of appropriations. whether will the bill captured well the issue, because we're talking about the creation of over 250,000 jobs spreading over on a yearly basis. So how do we must make sure that we achieve that. But then I just want to understand how do we accommodate that, because it's one of the key important areas that we need to understand. Also the issue of investment, infrastructure investment. We among the key, how does the government has identified infrastructure investment among the key measures for reigniting economic growth. So what is the share that we're talking about in terms of this bill is going to look into that, because it's going to be very important that we do. I'm just highlighting just the priorities that we set ourselves, as well, especially in the manifesto. I just want to, let me post the, come back later. Thank you very much.
Number two, in that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings, Deputy Minister and DG. The first symbol is the DG. And we also welcome the commitment that the Deputy Minister is actually making, of making sure that you will be constantly and continuously with us.
Chair,
I request that you introduce yourself so that he also knows who we are.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
I assume that you did it before. Thanks, Chairperson. I am Zola Mlenzana of the African National Congress, sitting in the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Thanks, Chair, for that.
I will not
dig deep, Chair, in the light of prior promised arrangement that Deputy Minister DG go for a workshop exercise wherein we have every time to dig deep into this issue and create understanding amongst each other, as some of us a little bit new into the field.
However, Chair, one has noted that the appropriation bill was tabled in Parliament at the time of the budget, and according to your slide, I think 3, on the 20th of February. But then the National Assembly has revised the bill now in June, hence we are in this process. Now, if one could just check, I will not be, as we said in the morning, I would not become an accountant here. I would talk people's language, where we come from. Does this process then, Honorable DM, take into cognizance the advancement of social transformation? I'm asking this chair. Perhaps one would put a question which was put in the morning, but now the other way around. Wherein you would, when reprioritizing DM, this advantage, I'm putting this one deliberately, chair, services which would be benefiting the poor. Like, for instance, we are talking the transport sector. You disadvantage your brother for whatever reason for benefiting your town and all that. Is that from a perspective also of what the manifesto of the governing party, which manifesto has made the governing party back into where it is now, still upheld? Two,
I'm trying, Chair, also to just pick up on a few issues. I understand Section 16
of the PFMA, and
without negating the narrative
which has just been portrayed by the DG, going forward, dear,
would we then see a situation where we do not see Section 16 made as
a way of bypassing the normal route that has to be taken in terms of appropriations?
I'm saying this because, Deputy Minister, in terms of percentages, of course, Section 16 would be talking of 2%. But now if you translate that 2% into rand and cents, you look at how heavy the figure is. 17.652 billion.
What is it that one would have done with that?
I understand. I understand that it is a responsibility of all South Africans to see to it that ESCOM is actually assisted, particularly with what the President in Sona actually said. But now I am saying, can't this then be a precedent? How do we cap the President? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. The next member.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ashwin Sarapin. I'm a member of the National Assembly Standing Committee and from the DA. Let me preface my remarks by saying that based on what we've seen over the last couple of years, and specifically over the last 3 years, ESCOM has become an existential risk to the future of our country, both in terms of finances and economic growth. Because of the shortage of electricity, we cannot grow this economy by more than 2% per annum. There just physically isn't enough electricity to industrialize. So when I see special appropriations and the invoking of the emergency provisions of the PFMA, I get very concerned because it seems as though it's becoming a blank check for ESCOM. And I want to know, starting with ESCOM, what steps are you putting into place to prevent abuse of these special appropriations and emergency funding? What have you done to support ESCOM's proposed restructuring and its breaking up into three different companies as announced by the President? What interventions specifically is being put into place to clean up ESCOM's bloated staff structure and its historically, let me find a suitable word, Madam Chair, its historically, I don't want to use the word dodgy, its historically problematic procurement processes, thank you, Madam Chair, particularly when we see contracts where ESCOM is purchasing coal that it cannot use in its plants. I mean, there's no point in taking public money. Money that taxpayers, that ordinary people who are trying to buy books for their children or food for their children for, and we're taking it and we're giving it to an entity that is buying coal that it cannot use. You know, these are the terms in which we must think about ESCOM now and what it is doing to our country. And so I am very uncomfortable that we are constantly throwing money at SOEs in general, and ESCOM in particular. And so I think that there's a big burden on the National Treasury to make sure that these things do not become blank checks. So that's ESCOM, Madam Chair, and if you'll allow me just more generally a couple of questions on the appropriation bill. Firstly, I see on the positive funding and reallocation slides 25, I think, of the main presentation, that I see two functions have been shifted to provincial governments from social development, mainly funding for one free ATM withdrawal per month for social grant beneficiaries, that's been shifted to provincial governments, and a social worker employment grant also shifted to provincial governments. Now, Madam Chair, in my previous term, I was a member of the Gauteng legislature, and the problem that kept popping up there was that, and I got along very well with my MEC there, Barbara Creasy, was the issue of unfunded mandates. It's the national government passing functions down to provincial and local government without giving them the resources to do it. And it then impacts frontline service delivery because they're fulfilling a mandate on the part of national governments. But then they've got to find the money from somewhere to do it. So are these functions more unfunded mandates being pushed onto provincial governments to try and plug fiscal holes that have been created due to mismanagement? And then in terms of the most recent cabinet appointments and the reconfiguration of governments and the merging of departments, is the National Treasury proposing rationalization of departments? I mean, when you merge departments, you're going to have two CFOs in one department unless you rationalize it very quickly, paying double the salaries and so on for very high-level people both doing the same job. Will these budgets significantly change in October when we get the adjustment budget to support the new structure of government? And of course, we know that further changes might be coming as well, and so on. So how soon can we expect a draft adjustment budget? And are the APPs aligned to this budget? And considering that there have been changes now, it's a new political term, when the APPs are approved by Parliament, isn't that going to create a major problem when we then try to merge departments again? Is we just going to lose an entire fiscal year now, is my question. Madam Chair, let me stop there. I don't want to take up all the questions I'm sure all the members have.
Thank you. Before I allow the next member to come in, just want to indicate that you did something so interesting to me. When you were introducing yourself, you were checking on your access card. I don't know if you were not sure who you were or you just wanted to break the ice. So you just wanted to make sure. Thank you. Can I allow the next member?
Thank you, Chair. Now, thank you very much for the presentation. And I must say the DG of Finance is one of the DGs that always adheres to his meetings from even the last term. But it's one of my experiences that he's always available if called to a meeting. And if he really doesn't attend, it's due to really important work. I can really attest to that as an opposition. We have worked together. My point, Chair, I have 2 points. I'm glad of the money that is going to sanitation in schools. But I want to check, will we give these schools, or if we identify how many schools, will we give them a time frame? Because now we are just putting their sum, and then they can come back again next financial year, and it's not done. So for this 1.84 billion, how many schools will that cater for to eradicate the pit toilets? And then on the other one, Chair, on the Eskom cash flow, I hear the one member have spoke about his manifesto, the ANC manifesto, but let me also enlighten about how the EFF feels about state entities. It's no illusion. We don't want it to be privatized. We do believe it must stay as state entities and be fully supported. However, I checked on the China Development Bank existence, they have been in existence or founded in 1994. So when a person promises us money, that they're going to give us money, I'm sure they would have known already of the limits or the limitations or sort of the red tape that they have to adhere to. So when we found ourselves being or committed or a person saying, we'll give you a loan or handout or donation, let us also as a state sort of adhere to saying, when you are making that promise or commitment to our country, you fully adhere to it. Because we have people to service, we have poor people that are going to sit in the dark if you don't adhere to your commitment that you have made to us. So we don't want to see things like that again in our reports, where a person has made a certain commitment towards us. If it's a loan, it's another case. But if you have said you are making a donation towards us, you should know by now the red tape. for a company or establishment that have been in so long in existence, we can't, as a country, literally adhere to such clumsy mistakes. I would believe that is very clumsy for an entity that has been in existence since 1994. Thank you very much.
Honourable Member, the next one, who's coming after you?
Thank you, Chair. I'm fine editor of the Freedom Front Plus. Honourable Member covered me almost completely with regards to the ESCOM issue. What's troublesome to me is that we are just forced to pour money into a very dark hole at this stage. And from our side, I think that we must put more pressure on ESCOM to get their house in order. I know that the employment issue is a big issue in ESCOM, with too many people being employed. And we must also look at the flip side of the coin, that should we not put pressure on them to get their structure in order, more work losses will be as a result, as ESCOM will not be able to supply the electricity that the country needs. So if we take into consideration that 24,000 works or people that might lose their work from ESCOM to get ESCOM's house in order, weigh that up to the millions of people that is currently in the country that is basically reliant on the provision of electricity. I think we must have a mind shift and look at the flip side of the coin as well, and from the Treasury side also put pressure on ESCOM to get their house in order. We cannot afford to keep throwing money into that dark hole. We cannot just go on and borrow money from China, etc., because the day will come when they'll come and get the keys for our country, because we won't be able to pay our bills and to pay settle that debt.
Thank you very much. Next member, Honourable Ryder.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dennis Ryder is my name, member of the NCOP representing Gauteng. For the first presentation, thank you very much once again. We've had two major events that have happened since the appropriation bill was initially drafted. There was the announcement of the new ministries, and then we had the State of the Nation address. Now, these have both had quite a big impact on the way that government needs to spend its money. And my honourable colleague, the Honourable Serapin, mentioned in part, but we have this issue of new ministries and the changes that has come about as a result of the amalgamation of certain ministries, etc. So my question is that I presume that there's a period of adjustment and restructuring. Has Treasury given a deadline for that restructuring? Because otherwise, you know, the benefits of that restructuring are not going to be seen. So if you can indicate if there's a deadline and perhaps at a future date you could tell us what the savings or what impact that restructuring is going to have. I think that would be very important for South Africa to see and hear. Also in terms of SONA, I know that there were some major adjustments and the word unfunded mandates again was mentioned by my colleague, but there were some additional duties placed on certain departments and pretty much with immediate effect. So, for example, I know that the Public Works Department now has to have oversight over the Development Bank of South Africa Fund for infrastructure. They're already under capacity in terms of the human resources, and I was wondering, you know, is there going to be an adjustment at this stage of the appropriation bill? So my question is perhaps more procedural. Do the departments still have an opportunity now to make amendments before this appropriation bill is signed off at the end of July? The next question refers to slide 11 and 12. It's a request to either have the full list of all departments in terms of these breakdowns for the COE budgets for all departments, as well as the obviously the next one, the appropriation for goods and services, and so on. So either if you could distribute to us a full list for all departments, or alternatively point me in the right direction where I can find that information, please. Skipping ahead to slide 19. Relating to the appropriation, transfers and subsidies, so the last one there on the list is for the CMA. I know what the CMA is. I just want to know what that payment is for. There's 849.9 million rand payment to the CMA. Where does that go? If you can just advise me of that. That's really my questions on the first presentation. The second presentation relating to Eskom specifically, I think all is quite scary. So I understand that Section 16 of the PFMA was invoked. I just want to ask, where did the money come from? Because we all heard about quantitative easing in the media recently, but I'm hoping that's not where the money came from. So has there been, you know, this money doesn't, you can't make a payment without getting it from somewhere. If you can just advise which departments will be giving up something for that special payment. It's quite scary as well that, you know, as a card player, I know that if you use your wild card or the joker, you normally use it at the end of the game rather than in quarter one. And we've played our get-out-of-jail-free card already, and there's not much space for it to, or, yeah, if something else goes wrong in this financial year, we're in a bit of trouble. I don't expect an answer on that statement. Then the question, or the way that the first bullet point on page 3, slide 3, is framed. Although the China Development Bank had committed to disperse $7 billion to Eskom, the bank was unfortunately unable to timeously execute this planned drawdown. This implies that the drawdown is still going to happen or could still happen. Will that then trigger a repayment to Treasury of that 7 billion rand, or will that 7 billion rand just be added into the money available to Eskom? I would hope that they would be required to repay, etc. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Before I give to Honourable Peters, there's something that we have raised, and I think I just want to put emphasis on that. The issue of the restructuring of the department. You spoke about the benefits. Restructuring always comes with benefits or casualties. Are there people who are going to lose their jobs? Because there's been such talks that the state needs to be slimmer and slimmer. So there are those questions, and I think we are the relevant people to ask this question because Treasury is the one that is budgeting and allocating money to these departments. And now that the departments have been reduced, how is the budget going to have an impact on the employees of government? Honourable Peters.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also want to thank the Deputy Minister and the DG, as well as the DDG and team for the presentation, but also for the presence of the Deputy Minister. I'm looking at the two presentations, and I'm asking myself a lot of questions, Chairperson, primarily because I'm sure you would remember the limitations that we raised at the beginning that probably because of the workshops not having happened, we might put the cart before the horse, but pardon me for that. There's on slide, which slide? There's the bill itself, that the slide that speaks to the bill. There's a point where it speaks to the report of the committee under slide 5. Mine is just a classic question there that says indicate the reason for such proposed amendment. And I want to know, before even taking into consideration the reallocation, where would the resources that the committee then, if empowered to do amendment, would then be able to utilize to offset some of the decisions that the committee would have taken to amend the proposal that comes from the department? That is the question that I wanted clarity on. And then going to the issue of reallocation. I think the previous speakers have also somehow taken a point in relation to the issue of the under slide 25 2025 related to the reallocations. Chairperson, my concern is also here. There's an indication there under social development that funding for the free withdrawal per month is also reallocated. I just want to find out, because there's been some challenges with regard to the issue of the transfer of the payment system and the challenges of the our people not being able to really understand how an ATM system operates and mixing up their numbers and keeping on losing their cards and all those, and the cost of replacing that card. One would have thought that we would allow for some time of adjustment to for people to get used to this the new system. But the other question is this one of social assistance grants, reduced estimates of grants requirements. I want to know what has changed here. Why is there some reduced? Why is it reduced? And maybe if I get more clarity, I will understand better. The other question is related to the one of energy, Integrated National Electrification Program. The IDEP is supposed to allow Lomama at Umhlaba Uyalingana to get access to electricity. We pride ourselves for the last 24 years to have electrified about 1,200 households per day. If there's this reallocation, how does it impact on that particular figure? And how does it impact on the target of eradicating the lack of access to basic electricity for lighting and other services in the households? As of concern here is not necessarily those who use and don't pay, but those who really don't have electricity as we speak at this particular moment. The other one is the matter related to ESCOM. The question that the colleague raised about China making a commitment and reneging, maybe that's a bad word. But what has subsequently happened at DG? Did ESCOM get or was this delivered on, and if it has, there was delivery on it, what impact does it have on this particular process that we are engaged in right now? But also, what type of relationship do we have with China for them to make this type of commitment and then just delay and all those type of things? I don't know whether it is within the rights of the bank to make a commitment and later on to just a delay or renege on that commitment. With regards to, is it unbundling? What's the report? Of ESCOM. I want to know, how is this process going to benefit ESCOM's ability to serve the economy of South Africa? But also, I'm not necessarily saying we are opposed to the restructuring of the electricity sector, but I want to know, how different is this one from the previous one? Because this is not the first time that this has been mentioned. There was even a stage where there was an independent systems and market operator bill that even went to the level of cabinet at a particular stage. And what now has changed, and how would it emerge differently? Because one could safely say to the honorable member from the EFF, at that stage there was no intention to sell out ESCOM, but to create entities, because it was also speaking to the relationship of ESCOM with the Southern African power pool and the ability of the region to be able to also buy power or sell power to ESCOM more on a competitive basis. But I am just raising that to understand, how does these processes differ from the previous ones? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Honorable
Karim.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Firstly, I think this is a matter that maybe the two chairs will want to engage with the DM and the DG offline. But it would be helpful to Parliament and to the Executive if the bill, special appropriations bill, came well before the time you needed. Well, you needed, but I mean, you know, we had to rush through these appropriation bills before special ones, and I think that this is too important, a special appropriations bill, to rush it. So perhaps the two chairs can engage with the DM and DG. Secondly, Fanny Tutoi talks about throwing money into a black hole. Now, across political party divide, my sense is that there is concern about where ESCOM is. It also applies to the president, no less, and the executive, all of us, as a minister of public enterprise, are concerned about ESCOM. But it'll be a far deeper black hole if we don't rescue ESCOM. And I would like to plead, colleagues, that ESCOM is just too important. It belongs to all of us, whichever party we come from. The country's economy can't be rescued unless we rescue ESCOM. We can quibble and fight about how we got here. It's fun. And the lessons we can learn. But rescuing ESCOM, I would suggest, with due respect to our party political differences, is something that all parties must agree to, I hope. The third thing is, I think it's fair for Parliament to say, given the DG would know more because the DM has just come in now, that you've been talking about DG, the executive, the department, about a chief restructuring officer. You've been talking about terms and conditions. So it also deals with Fanny Tutoi's problem, right? And our collective problem as Parliament. You know more than us how parlous the economy is. You know more than us how, you know, strained the budget is. So we can't just give money without clear and precise conditions. And it's not fair to expect Parliament to do that. So I would urge Comrade Chess that, you know, in the process of getting this bill, that offline you engage with the DM and the DG. So that we don't come here and then have hearings and then there are things that we could have anticipated will emerge that could be dealt with now in case there are things that the executive sometimes, you know, because of the vantage point they occupy, sort of lose out, and there are some things we can see that they can't see because of the vantage point we occupy. But the other thing is about the conditions is government has already spoken about unbundling. And I think it's reasonable now with the elections behind us, when they bring the special appropriations bill, we can't make it like a blank check. We have to know what it is you are doing. Besides having a chief restructure, what are you doing about unbundling? It's a complex matter, we agree. Personally, Comrade Chess, I find it very hard to believe it would be possible to do this without some or other job losses. And for government, it's important, given the losses of jobs in the private sector and elsewhere, to ensure that where there are job losses, urgent and serious consideration be given to seeing where you move these people who might be, if that's a correct word, terrible word to use, unnecessary for ESCOM. They must be located elsewhere. And there must be maybe, you see, something maybe, Chair, I don't know whether I should say this, but given that we won't see them for a while, we can also engage with the private sector, maybe it's pie in the sky wishes, and say, you have a vested interest in electricity and ESCOM working. Can you absorb in some of your private sector companies some of the workers? Now you have to engage with the union. So I think as a committee we have to require reports on how much of engagement there has been with the trade unions. Because there's no way we can restructure ESCOM without a sort of minimum degree of cooperation from the trade unions. I think the DM and the DG are very experienced people. They could bring this whole process to a standstill. And we'll have even more problems. So the other thing I think we should also signal now to the executive is that there must be concerted, effective, meaningful cooperation with the trade unions. Also, Comrade Chairs, I think we should look into this. When that bill comes, I think we should draw in the two committees of public enterprises, the NCOP and NA, because they deal with the policy issues, we deal with the financial issues. And many of these policy issues, Comrade Chairs, will be dealt with by them. You know, what are you doing about unbundling and so on, not by the Appropriations Committee. So one option is to bring them in, which I think as the Appropriations Committees, we should make it almost a principle. Where it affects a ministry or a department other than ours, we should call in the portfolio, what's it called, select committees and standing committees or portfolio committees. Then I want to take this opportunity, I've done it privately, but now as a member of the committee, to congratulate the Deputy Minister for his appointment. And lest the opposition parties misunderstand, perhaps I should explain. The use of the word principle is not to imply that we, as Parliament, have as a principle a member of the... It's the other way around, actually, as the DM will agree. They are the principals on our behalf. The Minister and Deputy Minister and DG answer to us. She's referring to principle, if you don't know, in respect of his role, Dr. Masondo's role now, not DM, as the head of the Oliver Tambo School. Yeah. Now, if you want to get enlightened and wizened, if there's such a word, nothing stops the opposition members from coming to attend the school. There is one minor matter. I hope Natasha's listening too. One minor matter, because it's easier for her, Natasha. One minor matter, you will have to join the ANC, which is the most sensible thing you can do, Natasha, in your life. Thank you.
You know, if Honorable Karim didn't behave like this until we close the meeting, it was going to be half a meeting, half time.
Point of order, I'm very well behaved.
I wouldn't have felt that I am wet. And you'll learn to get used to him and miss him when he's not there. And miss his jokes. He's very entertaining. Honourable Member, I think you have raised very important issues. Before I bring in my co-chairperson here to also comment on the presentation, I don't know if I heard you well, Honourable Karim, the cooperation between Treasury in the process of restructuring ESCOM and Labour. According to my knowledge and my experience, that cooperation is going to need it at the maximum level. It's very necessary throughout the way, from stage one until the last stage. So it is very important that you work together with Labour. Can I request my co-chairperson before we give over to the department?
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Good afternoon, welcome, DM. You are going to be part of this family. You'll get used to Comrade Yunis. let me start there. That if there's one reason that we should agree on, ESCOM is not just too big to fail; it is too important to fail. So I think that's important, and there is a commitment to all of us to make sure that it does, that it survives, because of its critical nature in our lives, but in the economy in particular. Comrade DM, the money is not a panacea to all problems. So we can come here and be throwing in money to ESCOM, but that doesn't mean that it's going to solve our problems. Right? The committee is sitting here, we've heard these things, there are things happening and so on. But if you need to appropriate money to ESCOM, we should know exactly what is happening. What are we trying to solve? And we need to be taken into confidence that that's the plan, so that we should know what plan we're supporting. Right? Right now, what we're asked to do, we know this, that the executive has been working on a number of things. But now we're expected to appropriate money to ESCOM, right? And not just, it's a lot of money. So I think we need, as the representative of the people of South Africa, to be taken into confidence to exactly hear the plan, and that's what we're trying to support. Because we shouldn't fool ourselves and think that once we've thrown in money, then the problems are going to disappear. But to underline the fact that we're all committed to making sure that ESCOM stands firmly and it plays its role. I know the extreme position says if you privatize ESCOM, the problems of ESCOM will disappear. No, I always maintain that the electrification that the people of South Africa have had since 1994, if ESCOM was private, wouldn't have achieved even a third of what we've achieved. So the economic and developmental role of ESCOM is very important to underline. Coming back again, I think the mitigating factor of you are invoking of section 16 will be is not a figure which just came out of nowhere. The Minister of Finance did talk about it in his budget, that what was coming, the way of recapitalization of as part of recapitalization of ESCOM. So it's not a complete surprise. It was part of his budget. So that's why I'm saying that's a mitigating factor. But having said that, DG, you're talking about that if we had failed, if we have defaulted on Absa Capital debt, there would be more negative consequences. I think you need to get into that so that you can understand the magnitude of the implication of us defaulting. Whether defaulting at SAA or defaulting anywhere else, but this one is a major one. Because as government, we are guarantor of the debts of these companies and so on. What is the impact? I think we need to get into that so that we appreciate perhaps what the department was facing and the government was facing. And I will be amiss if I don't share with you that the committee, parliament in general, takes a dim view of invoking of section 16. I'll tell you the theory that, oh, they are running away from us. I was also guilty of this at some stage. I think you should know that they take a dim view. From my side, the end, there was nothing which was giving me sleepless night, like coming to Parliament and come and explain why Section 16 had to be invoked. So I think it's something that really, really should try to avoid as much as possible, and that we don't do this, because a lot of conspiracy theories start coming up when that happens, that no, they didn't want to come to us, they wanted to do this and give us fait accompli. So I think one needs to underline that that part. A question, I heard that in this financial year we would have exhausted our 2% payment. But can I throw in something? Does it mean that in the next financial year we are looking at section 16? When is it coming back again? That's my other saying, we don't want to see it coming back. let it be planned and so on. This one I've raised with the DM privately, that since time immemorial, when it comes to the SOEs in general, we've been speaking about the SEPs, strategic equity partner, that we're looking at and so on. What are the processes? Where are we? Or have we discarded that strategy? We can't be saying we're doing one and the same thing for a long time. It's either we're doing it or we're not doing it. Otherwise, again, as you know, that the believers of market, they'll tell you that market wants certainty. What are we doing? And when are we doing it? And if we're doing it, can we please do it? And if we're not, let's know exactly what it's a hold up. Again, when we appropriate, we are looking at the finances of government in general. We've always spoken about the disposal of non-core assets and so on and so forth. DG, where is that process? What is happening? Have we abandoned it? Or even the definition and the explanations of what are we looking at? Because I'm afraid that we'll sit here and come back again and be talking about the very same thing. What's the hold up? And again, for me, we should be decisive. I've been a manager of someone. When I decide whether people like it or not, but I've decided, then they can follow that. If we are continuing with whatever, the non-disposal of non-core assets, do we know them? Where are they? When is it going to happen? And if it doesn't happen, what are the implications? We are not behaving like people who are really, really facing a serious fiscal challenge. I think we need to say something about that. One of the things which came up is the the one of the sectors that have been identified by government, especially around the stimulus package, but amongst the stimulus of economic growth in general, it's agriculture. If I may share this with you, my first interaction with the former CEO of the Land Bank, TP, I was somewhere and so on, and they just released their results and introduced himself in my previous, I said, oh, it's you, TP. It's you, the guy who's not allocating money to black farmers, because I'd seen what he had just announced. I think now the loan book of Land Bank is around about 45 billion. As things stand now, about only 5 billion rand has gone to black farmers or empowered farmers and so on. And that's nothing to talk about when you're saying you want to use this sector. So when I spoke to TP, I said, why are you doing this? And he said, no, can I come to your office and explain? And it took me to what in army terms you call a crash course of what is happening. He said to me, the money that we are using at Land Bank is the money that we get from the market, and the market expects some returns on the money that we get. And I said, what do you get from government? No, we're not getting money from government. And that can't be correct. We can't expect the Land Bank to perform a particular economic and developmental role, but we don't support it. I see there's a blended finance that we're talking about, but again, if you look at the money that is allocated to that, it's nothing to talk about at the extent of the challenge that we're looking for at that sector. So a DG is an area that I would really love you to look at, where we can get some transfers. And if you look at the agriculture money, it's lying all over. And in some other instances, people are not very sure what to do with that money. But if we want to assist emerging farmers, I think it's very important that we should be deliberate in that strategy. It can't be an ad hoc thing that is a touchy-touchy. We should be deliberate, and also we should put, what do they say, our money where our mouth is. Yeah, I think we need to do that. I see there's money which is going to rural development and land reform for new offices. But we've had the two departments, the Land Reform Department and Agriculture, coming together. Why new offices? Perhaps we can get some explanation. Lastly, DM, in our previous session, which is also very much relevant to this one, we said to Dr. Mambo, we don't want to be accountants in this committee, where we look at the budget that okay, this was budgeted, and this is the actual, and this is the variance, and then people explain the variance. Because for us, at the end of the day, we've said as a country, said as government, that we've got the challenges of challenge economic growth, negative growth in the first quarter. We've said we've got very high crisis level of unemployment. It's the poverty and inequality. And the president has committed us to producing 10 million jobs in 2 million jobs in the coming 10 years. Now, when we spend, are we only going to be surprised after 5 years that we have not been able to create these jobs? That's one. But two, creating jobs is something, because you can easily do that, create jobs, but find that unemployment is growing up, just like it has happened in the previous term. We have created jobs, but the net effect is that we have also been losing jobs. So how do we make sure that when we create more jobs, we add on something? We're not throwing water into the sieve where we create new things and we're losing jobs. Do we have such strategies? I'm saying, I know some of these things may not necessarily belong to your department, but they are very important if you are going to allocate money. Because they should have an impact analysis type of an approach when we go to budgeting, to look at the broader economic and developmental challenges that we are trying to address. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was hoping that someone is going to share with you, DM and DG, about something that was very seriously raised in our previous session. The issue between PRASA and SANRAL, the transfer of money from Brasa to Sandra, that we think that move it's not, I don't know how to put it, I don't want to say political because it has got nothing to do with politics, but it's not a correct move because it disadvantages the poor of the poorest. Where we are supposed to be focusing, we are taking that money away and put the money to Sandra. And the other matter which was raised, it was the issue of the RAF, Road Accident Fund, that there's this new bill that we want to change this RAF to the new system. We want to request UTM and the DG to talk to your colleagues that that process of finalizing the bill, it must be processed in a very speedy way because of the experiences that we have seen and we are experiencing in as far as road accident fund is concerned. The system of road accident fund is easily manipulated, and we know the sectors that they are manipulating the system and they don't want the new system to be introduced, the new act to be introduced. And we also are aware that that manipulation is impacting on the ordinary people that are using public transport because we have to build that manipulation. You got or road accident fund gets revenue through fuel levy, and if the fuel levy is increasing, public transport increases, and at the end of the day, ordinary people are being affected. I'm not saying those who are driving cars, they are also not complaining. They are also complaining and they are affected. So it will be necessary, DM and Jefferson, that we look into those matters. In the first presentation, Doctor, you spoke about increases and decreases. To me, it was not clear as to the reasons why increase here and why decrease there. Hence, we need to support you. I just want clarification, or maybe if members are comfortable with that, that we can get more clarity and get into depth if they understand in the workshop that we are anticipating, we are planning. But I wanted to understand, why do you increase where you are talking about increase? Why do you decrease where you are talking about decreasing? Thank you. I don't know who's going to start talking to the questions. Doctor, maybe you first, before this.
I will respect protocol.
Oh, DG. DM first. Okay, if you talk about protocol, then it should be the DM. But my protocol says that after the DM has spoken, nobody else can speak.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. The DM obviously will come to specific questions that were directed. But, Honorable Buthelezi, I'm not going to do what you said I shouldn't do. I'm not going to do that. On a lighter note, Honorable Buthelezi thinks I speak a lot and too much until it's time over to go to the bus. I'm going to not do that because it's a very easy meeting and I think we have to help each other go through the issues. So, but maybe let me start here, Chair. It's important to, if Mampo did not say to the committee earlier that the appropriation process also over and above just this committee not being an accounting or accountant, but there's revenue and there's spending and there's income. So we can only spend what we have. So the appropriation bill process allocates money from the National Revenue Fund, and the National Revenue Fund for a specific period can only be 1.4 trillion for that year and nothing else. So as a start, that's what informs us from actually engaging with process and engaging with all of these things. Our job is very difficult. In fact, the first 15 years of our democracy, our job was very easy. Because what we did, we simply had more. It was just using the skills that we have learned from a business school or a public, government, business school that allocates resources because they are there and there's no tax revenues are moderate, growth is there, etc. And that's what happened in the first 15 years of our democracy. From 2009 onward then, and it's worse now, because we oversee a budget process which does not have extra resources available. So what it means then, we must then look at the pot and then reallocate, reprioritize, cut. And it's a very conflictual process by nature where we fight with departments and we fight with some committees in parliament, because some committees will say, but you did not allocate resources to our sector. And then it becomes a contentious process. So that's one thing that I thought I must mention, that in the last 9 years, it hasn't been easy, because clearly tax revenues have been declining and then growth has not been realized. And as a result, we have to, the pot or the cake became smaller for us to be able to appropriate. That's why we have started in the last couple of years talking about reprioritization, cuts, etc. Coupled with that, and I'll talk to the ESCOM issue directly, coupled with that, we've got very challenging environment and the state-owned company environment, in particular with ESCOM. And we have, and it has been said, and it's all over, and even in budget documentation, that the ESCOM's challenges are deep in that the challenges that we experience from the procurement process in ESCOM, the example about the coal contracts was given, and obviously capacity and skill and many other challenges that we experience. And some of these things obviously came through the State Capture Commission, and we picked it up directly and indirectly as to what could have been the challenge at ESCOM. ESCOM's debt is 450 plus billion, and it's increasing by the day. There was a point in our history, post-apartheid South Africa, especially in the last 18 months, 2 years at least, where ESCOM could not go into the market at all. Where the market was saying, including South African banks and lenders and ESCOM boards, were saying, we are not going to participate anymore in ESCOM, including other state-owned companies. We then had to engage these lenders differently, behind closed doors, take off our gloves, and explain to them the importance of ESCOM, and they know that. Now, if you know ESCOM, or maybe let me take you to an example. 30 years ago in New York, there were blackouts, 2 days, 3 days, and they were able to quickly turn around. Now, if in South Africa we have to have blackouts because of the challenges, I'm not talking about load shedding. I'm talking about total blackout of ESCOM for 1 day. To get back, that's the end of our economy. So not only ESDM, the Honorable Buthelezi, is it too big to fail, but it's too important, I agree. And so we could not, and we cannot look away when we have to deal with ESCOM and the challenges. Now, it's also irresponsible of us to continue pouring ESCOM without a storyline that holds everything together. And I think that realization is there. The State of the Nation was very clear in February. The State of the Nation was very clear a few weeks ago around what exactly has to happen in ESCOM. Now, there are three things that I think are important as part of the Appropriation Committee looking at ESCOM. We have to look at ESCOM in terms of its capacity to exist beyond today and say, in its current form, is it able to get into the market? No. How do we get it back into the market? The President gave us an idea around an unbundling process whereby we can enhance private sector participation in other ways. We have already had private sector participation in generation and distribution, and that's important, must be enhanced, it must continue. So you need a new ESCOM with a new business model and a new capital structure that addresses its financial sustainability moving forward. That we have to do. Secondly, ESCOM's debt. How we deal with it, we have to be careful. One is that you've got long-term bondholders, you've got short-term bondholders, you've got very short-term debt types.
people who are funding ESCOM on an ongoing basis. Now, we cannot loosely talk about restructuring ESCOM's debt, because that has got implications. In it, it's an act of default by just saying, as government, that we are going to restructure ESCOM debt. That can be viewed as an act of default, and then money can then be called based on the agreements and the guarantees that we gave ESCOM. 350 billion rand of guarantees. So we have to be careful. But what we are saying and what we've been saying is that ESCOM's finances and debt situation needs to be addressed. And that's the second thing that must be addressed. The third is also looking at the restructuring and the future of ESCOM and what type of new ESCOM do we see which will be able to go back into the market. So, and I agree with honourable members, and we have said it to the Department of Public Enterprises, and we have agreed that a special appropriation will be hollow, and if we don't couple that with a storyline around the future of ESCOM, to a point where even the President in the State of the Nation responses last week mentioned a paper on how, or call it the white paper, as to how ESCOM should be. And I think at the time of tabling that special appropriation, not only should we table the bill, but we should also table a paper that talks about the future of ESCOM along these four areas that I mentioned. The energy sector and the energy, the debt situation, the financing of ESCOM and the restructuring of ESCOM. So I think it's important that we do that. The third most important thing that we will do, apart from just tabling the bill and also coming with the white paper, is to announce the restructuring officer that the Minister of Finance come about. We should be able to say, here's a team of people or here's an individual who is going to be leading the restructuring of ESCOM. In that way, we are able to then buy confidence back that is lost in ESCOM. I was in London on Monday, Tuesday, trying to explain these things to some of the investors that hold ESCOM bonds and that hold our bonds, because clearly you have to engage that community, whether we like it or not, and explain, and it's always good that you engage face to face with them, whether they are here or not. The key for them was exactly this point, that you cannot keep on putting money in ESCOM without a storyline that talks, and that's what we indicated, that's what I think the President also mentioned in the responses and the Minister of Public Enterprises. So the complete story of ESCOM should come our way as we engage with the special appropriation over and above what we have, and it's obviously going to add more to what we said in February around the turning around of ESCOM. I agree with Chair, with the fact that we cannot explain this alone. We need ESCOM here, the board here, we need the Department of Public Enterprises here to talk to policy-related issues, because the financing issues, we can talk to them, we can say we are going to be giving them so much, but then the policy, for including the Department of Energy, by the way, so that we complete this process around how ESCOM will be dealt with. The China. Let me explain the China develop the China loan. And it's not a grant; it's a loan. And China can just be like any other. It could even be Absa Capital loan. It could be Standard Bank in this case. So it's not China the country. China the company, a state development company called China Development Bank. Now the issue here is that, like other lenders would do, and like other lenders have exercised their rights as per the agreement, China Development Bank wanted to be engaged with. They were not reneging from the decision or the process. But it was more the problems than the challenges in ESCOM, by the way. It is more the uncertainty that we know has bedeviled ESCOM to date, including the uncertainty or the policy or the environment uncertainty that we didn't provide guidance on ESCOM. To their benefit and to their defense, call it that, if I can do that for now, is that they only picked up the issue like any other in terms of ESCOM's restructuring. And they say, but we are asking fundamental questions. This loan is guaranteed loan. What about our money that we've already put in ESCOM? Until such time that we want to engage this further, we will hold back in the meantime. It's in agreement, we will hold back, and here you are. Immediately we dispatched the team, we were already engaging other lenders in New York at the time. At the same time, we dispatched the team of officials from Treasury and DPE to engage with China Development Bank in Beijing. They explained, about 3 months ago, I think, China Development Bank executives, top senior presidents, executives, engaged with us, myself and the DG of Public Enterprises, on the same matters, because they wanted to understand where is ESCOM going. The same questions that I, as a, on your behalf, the credit committee, call it that, of the country. Because ESCOM and DP comes to Treasury, and we ask difficult questions. When are you going to do this? When are you going? They were asking us the same questions. What about the restructuring? When are you going to appoint the chief restructuring officer? Is my money secured? Are you going to renege on your guarantees? Etc. So we had to answer all of those questions. And I can comfortably say, yes, the money now, finally, the relationship is normal, because they were able to be satisfied that we gave satisfactory responses, and they were able to disburse the money that was outstanding. Now, whether we'll pay back that money, the allocation is part of the 23 billion. It's not outside, so it's not new money. And just to explain also in terms of another question, when APSA advanced, it was just an advance over a weekend, by the way. If you looked at the date again, it was a weekend, a Friday to by Tuesday we paid back APSA the garage, because it was such, Deputy Honorable Telezi, and you understand the implication thereof, and I'll explain this for the benefit of other members. If APSA did not come to the party, it will mean that ESCOM would have defaulted on its payments, creditor payments at the time. And then that has got implication in terms of the actual viewed or how the entity is viewed by long-term bondholders who will see ESCOM as having defaulted on its mandate, including paying its creditors. And that will have ignited a provision in terms of the guarantee agreement that we have with them that, hey, state, if I see challenges here, give me my money. A few years, 2 years ago, the same thing happened. And I'll give you an example, Chair. I'm not going to be long on our utility. What we did with ESCOM the last time, ESCOM was, in terms of the guarantee agreement, ESCOM cannot get a qualification in their finances. Cannot. ESCOM, 2 years ago, got a qualification. All lenders, local and international lenders, were exercising their role. DBSA was leading. They say, oh, give me my 15 billion of French development agency said, give me my $2 billion. Everyone was calling their money. We had to engage on behalf of ESCOM as treasurer to say, you cannot call your money. You cannot call on your money because we are fixing ESCOM and ESCOM will be fixed. So the same thing happened here, that if you don't come to ESCOM's rescue when it is time to do that, or for ESCOM to service its debt obligations, that in itself is an act of default, and the whole 350 billion rand can be called in terms of what. And that's where we, and again, we were in conflict with the previous committees in Parliament of the fifth administration, where we viewed an act of bailing out the state-owned company like we did the South African Airways. When debt was due, lenders were calling on their money, because if not, it means there's a cross-default in the system. Now, cross-default, the implications are as follows. All state-owned companies who have exposure, that debt can be called. Now, we're talking Sunrise debt, we're talking Denel, we're talking SAA, all state-owned companies. Now, to avoid that, the entity at question should meet its obligation. That's why at the time we gave SAA money to pay his debt. In this case, again, we have to come to ESCOM's rescue, because we all know that as a responsible shareholder, the capital structure is something wrong with the capital structure, something wrong with the business model, and that is being fixed. So I just thought, let me spend some time explaining that challenge. And the other thing, and Mampo and GM can also come here, the other big thing, I think, where we sit is that, as I said, we are in an era where there's no money, enough money available. We have to make this one angry and this one happy. Now, in the process, we can fault. But and I didn't get the names, I'm sorry, I'm going to, Honorable Chair, with your permission, I'm going to say number one and number two in terms of the issues that were raised. The issues that are raised, yes, the issues that were raised is more in line with the budget process that churns out at the end of the day the appropriation bill. There is a process that starts now, every year, it starts around now, June, July, We issue budget guidelines. Departments have to see them. Now, all of those will be informed by, in this case, it could be the NDP, whatever the government of the day wants or the ruling party wants. And that will translate into sector programs. Various departments will put all of these things together. There's a process where we all collate, and that becomes our role. But there's also in the process, because we oversee something called functional group meetings, in the budget process, budget forum meetings, where we engage with departments and argue things out based on how we understand what is mandate and so on. Finally, the medium-term expenditure committee make recommendations to MINCOM, BAC, Ministers Committee on the Budget, and there's 5 or 6 meetings per year. After that, the Ministers Committee on the Budget makes recommendations to Cabinet. Cabinet then owns this and finally translates it into appropriation bill that's finally passed by the Minister of Finance in February. Now, that's the process. Sometimes the mistake that most people make, and this can come through in the workshop as we explain ourselves properly, Treasury is always pointed fingers. Treasury, you have allocated this. Treasury, sometimes it doesn't, especially in the last 9 years, when I said 15 years before, we used to do things properly because we had money. We were allocating. People came to Father Christmas and we used to give money. Now it's not there anymore. We are not that role anymore. It's more bring everyone and say, these are the new priorities. We've got elections. We've got Sandra. We've got this. Where and how do we get money? Because there's no new money coming to the system. So it's always conflictual in that, like Honorable Chair, you did indicate that it may not be ideal that we take money from Prasa to give Sandra. But the reality is that in the last 2 years we've been doing it. And let's ask ourselves, why have we been doing it? Or why the process has churned it out? Sandra has to meet its debt obligations. In Sandra's program, there's something called Gauteng Freeway Improvement Program, GFIP. Now, if there's a view that says toll roads, tolls, e-tolls, people should not pay tolls, and there's a 20 billion rand debt on Sandra, because they raised money, they went into the market and raised money, who is going to service that debt and how is it going to be serviced? Now, again, the National Treasury in us comes in and says, in order to avoid the default by Sandra, something has to happen because they don't have the money. And where do we get the money from? Do we get it from education? No. Do we get it? Then because we are sector-based, our process, budget process is sector-based, we then recommend to Cabinet finally a process that says, let's look at the sector, the infrastructure, whatever. And then Prasa, then because they're all in the roads, transport sector. And Prasa would have had resources. Prasa would have been having surpluses in some cases. We then take money from Prasa to give Sandra in order for Sandra to meet his debt obligations, also to do some of the roads, etc. So it's a very tough process sometimes that we have to engage with. But because it's a recommendation, it's an appropriation bill, it's not an act, the committee then can decide that no, don't take money from this one because of the reasons that are being advanced, but take it from that one. And then we can come up with facts and colleagues in the room. The reason you have colleagues here, they see some of them to be treasury officials, but they are spokesperson for the various sectors. Those are that's where Mampo comes from. Because then Julia in education will say, no, don't touch higher education, don't touch basic education, because it's free education and it's costing us so many billions. And then naturally then, because there's no new money, then people then hold their positions. So sometimes then it becomes a very difficult situation where we have to then make tough recommendations that talks about taking money like the way we did. And Honorable Peters is right. There are other processes in terms of reforming the energy sector that are outside us that I think we have to obviously, the Department of Energy must come to the party in trying to arrange, address those. And I'm trying to go through all of my questions that I think I've done well, Mampo, so far, Honorable Chair. Maybe the jobs. And again, it's talking to the question on jobs. That we have chosen to view the role of government as not creating jobs. We have to create an environment conducive for jobs to be created. Because once we get that wrong, that says government is going to create jobs, then we are born, then first you'd want us to show how many jobs we've created as government. Our GDP is like what, 4 trillion, 5 trillion? And we can only contribute a third or even less of South Africa's GDP as a state, as government. Majority of the jobs are created in the private sector. We should just make sure that you create a conducive environment for job creation to and clear all the bottlenecks like we've done. And the bottlenecks are many, by the way. If we have to have a much broader conversation around what are the measures that will boost economic growth, we can identify sometimes where we get it wrong as government and where we need to speed up certain investments. Finally, the final point is infrastructure. On infrastructure investments, we have made it clear that it's a priority of the current government. It is in the appropriation bill. We have set up something called the Budget Facility for Infrastructure. President mentioned the infrastructure fund which will be created in the, you know, in the 100 billion over the next 10 years. These are all hallmarks of what we are trying to make. The problem in South Africa is not, the challenge around infrastructure is the pipeline. We don't have a clear-cut pipeline of projects that are ready to be funded. We have been struggling with creating a pipeline. We have been struggling to, now, because of this, we then created this facility, we call it the BFI, Budget Facility for Infrastructure, where departments submit projects to Treasury, and we've got a very rigorous process. Our officials who are experts in this area, including experts at CSIR, including experts at DBSA, then appraise or evaluate these processes. Oh, the first year, 2 years ago, the first 40 projects were submitted through the BFI process. One project got a tick. All because the fundamentals of project implementation, sorry, project management and project preparation are not there. So we have to build capacity. That's why we have partnered now, and we said we will use the DBSA as a hub. We've partnered with people like the World Bank, who are experts, look for experts in the African Development Bank, in all of these DFIs, including other individuals who we think can help us model what kind of an infrastructure delivery mechanism should be put in place. And then we are doing that. So infrastructure investments are important, but the capacity in the state, and I'm being upfront and very honest here, the capacity in the state to put infrastructure projects together is not there across the system. Over years, that capacity has been obviously either through retirement and various other processes where the private sector grabbed people. We also have the same issue in the Treasury here. I think I'm done, Chair, and maybe we can maybe ask the DM to maybe just go. And finally, I don't think, yes, you are right, Honourable Tillis. We don't want to bypass the appropriation process to a Section 16. It is only through considerations that we think are dire in nature that may really bring the economy down that sometimes. Section 16 has only been used 3 times in the last 25 years, since 1994. It has never been used. And it was only recent now when we did SAA and when we did, this is 2 years ago, and when we did. So we've never used it, and I don't think we should use it. It's wrong. We only when there's war and natural disasters, then we can use it. But it's not ideal that we continue using that. DM, Mom, I don't know.
Can I give
just before the doctor come in, can I just on one word in the presentation that the DG have spoke to? I just want to, because when I look on page one on this presentation, the Eskom cash challenge, cash flow challenges, there's a word there, committed to disperse. And then when I look at the translation of the direct translation of the word, and the DG said it's a loan. So I think just can we put our terms correctly in our presentations as well, that it reflects like that? Because I want a normal or ordinary person that is going to take this presentation, and when they look at it, it must reflect to them that it's a loan and not like disbursement, it's a donation or a payout or a handout like that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honourable Ryder.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to raise a red flag. This presentation on the Eskom issue, page 3, that same paragraph, gives an explanation of why the money wasn't forthcoming, and it says it was due to central bank exchange control requirements. And I've been given an entirely different explanation. And my request, Mr. Mokgojane, is that in future we are extremely honest with each other. That's the only way that we can grow this relationship going forward. Otherwise, we're going to have a difficult interaction every week that we meet. So to have one explanation on paper and another one spoken, I think is very problematic for me and a matter of major concern. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Peters, I'll explain why I'm conducting this meeting the way I do later. Honourable Peters?
Just a small one, Chairperson. Thank you very much to the DG and me for the responses. Just a small question. Is National Treasury has got oversight over, as well as in the governance arrangements with ESCOM, there is a role for National Treasury? I'm asking this in your overall capacity. Why then do we have SOEs and SOCs having so much problems with the intervention and the role and participation of National Treasury officials not help these boards of entities to be able to have any warning type of indicators and interventions so as to avoid us arriving at this particular point? Similar to colleague Natasha's issue, the question I raised about China was not necessarily China, the country, but the Development Bank of China, based on the word commitment, because it is in the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll revert back to, okay, you want to come in? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a bit worried, and I think I need to raise these questions. The DG said they had to take money from Prasa to SANRAL. But my concern is that are we saying SANRAL should be should meet its obligation at the expense of the poor? Because there are so many deaths that are happening to the poor people by the failure of SANRAL to maintain the trails and so on. Yet we say here we should assist SANRAL in meeting its own obligations. That is a very worrying factor. And then the other question that I still feel it was not answered, or maybe we should be taken into confidence with Chairperson, is the money being poured to ESCOM. But then I think as the EFF we need to know as to where, as and when. There's nothing wrong in bailing out ESCOM because there is a need. However, as and when we bail them out, we need as well to have a plan on to how to sustain them going forward. We cannot only depend on bailing them out without having a plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Zolani Mkiva, ANC Member of Parliament. Well, this is just a point of emphasis on my side, DG, on the issues of monies where they are drawn from in order to make an intervention elsewhere, either as a bailout or something. I don't really mind if PRASA is not spending money and money is sitting there in there's a big bank balance which is not utilized for what it's meant for. That explanation suffices for me. But when you're going to take money from non-toll roads, specifically that are supposed to go for infrastructural investment in rural communities and so on and so forth, that one, DG, I would like to make an appeal that it should stop immediately. That's the first thing that I would like to say. Secondly, having taken that money, say for the past 2 or 3 years, and you used it for a bailout at a level of SANRAL in order to finance the toll roads in Gauteng, I just want to check what is the plan going forward. Is that money gone forever, or is there a way in future where you will compensate such monies? I'm saying that in the context that there's a big gap in terms of infrastructural investment for urban areas vis-a-vis rural communities. So if that tragedy continues, that gap is going to continue to widen. And that's why I would like to check with your good office if there is a plan in place to ensure that you compensate for that lost ground insofar as investment, particularly as it talks to the road networks in the countryside. Thank you.
Okay. I said I will explain why I conducted this meeting the way I did. It's because of the way I read the importance of this meeting. And I don't want us or any of the members to go out of this meeting not clarified on issues that he or she is not clarified. I don't want us to go out of this meeting with issues hanging, because we don't know when else will we meet. And when we meet in the next meeting, there will be another agenda. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to make follow-ups on issues that you are not clarified on. I'm still going to give you another opportunity. There's another 6 o'clock bus. We'll catch that bus. As long as we will do justice to the work that we are supposed to do and not rush. Honorable Bo Peters, you are still not satisfied. Even before he responds, you want to make an addition on what you have made an input on. I don't know, Honorable, you also want to? Is there any question? Is there a new question? No, I'll understand. You are not here when we started. I'll give you an opportunity. I'm very democratic. Thank you. Yes, madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. And Tunuka Lengelendo, that was raised by my comrades here. You know, maybe the pain is being from a rural province, an underprivileged province, an under-resourced province, that actually just gets 2% of the total of fiscal. But also, having had the honor and privilege to be deployed by the African National Congress to see the challenges in our country, as we speak, even last night, if you watch what is this other programs that show these challenges, you would have seen what happened with these kidnappings that are happening in the Eastern Cape, primarily because of lack of access to reliable, affordable, efficient public transport, where women are being raped 5 times in one night, dumped into a river. And you have that type of situation, and you then look back and say, DG, I think me and you even have a historic picture somewhere where some of the decisions related to the matter I'm speaking about would have been dealt with. But truly speaking, to deny. I want to second what you're saying, that the decision to transfer internally into a vote or a sector is probably a good principle, but to rob the poor, it's very painful. Because one of the things that we need to understand is that there are many parts of our country, including In we're still battling with a treasury being able to efficiently fund a scholar transport. Earlier on, we spoke, DDG would remember, we spoke about the issue of the children who still, and teachers, who still have to cross the rivers to go to school, or alternatively to walk 22 kilometers to avoid crossing a crocodile-infested river. In this country called South Africa, where we have the Umgeni interchanges, where we have the GFIPs, in this country you have that type of situation emerging. So, and if we say we take from the non-toll to give to the toll, I think it is important that probably as treasurer you also educate the public about this particular issue. I'm going back to Chairperson to the point that I raised earlier on that. As a country and as a government, as parliament and different structures, we fail to educate the public about the GFIP not being a transport issue but a funding or a finance issue. And I think it is important that that be dealt with and the departments responsible be able to sort that out. But we cannot allow ourselves sitting here to agree to take the money. We'd rather say, let us fund those aspects. We know we've got under the PRMG provinces that are struggling to finish their projects in terms of making sure, Mpumalanga, you would know, there are roads that we're still struggling, the R40 and all those, where there's no money to complete those particular roads. In the Eastern Cape, there are many of those. In Limpopo, I don't want to speak about those. People cross the busy freeways when they could be creating even pedestrian crossings and all those type of things. So I am appealing to you, DG and Deputy Minister, and through to National Treasury, that the decisions we make should actually speak to what we are about. That pro-poor policy must be able to be seen in the way in which we take decisions. So now I won't support you to call for money to be taken from the other thing. The reason I asked the question about the role of your representatives on the boards of these entities. How do we arrive at this point when there is a National Treasury representative standing on the PRASA board to make sure that this type of situations don't arise? So that we arrive at a point when we need to be sitting at this end and saying money from Metro Rail. I'm not going to be talking about it. From Metro Rail, which is taking those students who must go for an interview, who missed the interview because the train did not arrive, or the train just stopped in the middle of nowhere because it is not in good condition. Those people who missed the operations they're supposed to go and undergo because the train did not come at the right time. That's why our people will end up going to sleep on the doorstep of the hospital or on the benches to make it possible that they make the operations. That pregnant woman that might deliver in the train because the train is delayed. All those challenges must tell us that things must change. Let's think about our people. Madiba in 1994 set a better life for all. So we cannot allow some of us to have... In conclusion, Chairperson, just on this decision here, GFIP, we have brought down one of the best performing government entities to its knees.
Honorable Clara, and then I'll ask the Honorable Whip of the Committee.
So thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Masefa Kodikhale. I am representing African National Congress in the National Assembly. I am from a rural area of the Limpopo province. My question might also be rural, more rural. So I was not here in the meeting when we were starting because I had to go and attend another meeting. So if ever I am out of order, my apology in advance. And if ever this was being said or touched by other members, I would want to put an emphasis. I'm on slide number three, government intervention, whereby the National Treasury and Department of Public Enterprise continues to work closely with Eskom Treasury to monitor the company's daily cash flow requirements and its financial position. This sentence takes me to the projects that are happening all over the country in our rural areas. The projects will apply for funding, for assistance with Eskom. And Eskom will go all over and put those big transformers. I don't know as to how much one costs. And I believe it costs a lot of money. And at the end of the month, they will then go back and look for, I don't know how to put it in English, but they would require the projects to pay back the transformers and also to pay what Eskom gave to the project. And these projects are not allowed to have a prepaid electricity. So to me, Eskom might be able to fund itself rather than to look for funding somewhere. But then it's failing because these transformers at the end of the day end up being a lot because the projects can't be able to use the electricity, or if they use the electricity, they are unable to pay, and Eskom will come chairperson and cut on the electricity. So if ever they put in, assist the projects to use the prepaid, I'm sure at the end of the day, if all the projects are working, they'll be able to fund itself. And if these projects are falling, or a better way, yeah, English, this project, then these people end up losing whatever they started, and also Eskom lose, because those transformers are there, they're not working, they're not doing anything. So to me, if ever their monitoring system can also talk to this and assist this project, it will also end up assisting Eskom. Thank you, Chef.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to come in, intervene as a whip to suggest this process. We think that this subject of transfer or the issue of Sunrail discussion, we started by indicating that we thought maybe we'd have sufficient time to have a lot of information session around the issue subject, such that now when we come here, we have cleared a number of areas. So now, seeing that the discussion might, you know, unawarely take us into different, or I mean, certain directions, the process here that one would suggest is that we want to interact more with this issue, that the Treasury must, in the meantime, hold on that matter, so that we come back and then we make a proper, you know, intervention on the discussion. That would be my point.
Thanks for the intervention, and I think I'm happy that also Parliamentary Budget Office is here, because also their mandate is to advise the committee and the Treasury on budgeting. And I think going forward, we have agreed on the workshop sessions that will give us enough opportunity to engage on these matters. And the process of the finalization of this bill is still going on. It's work in progress. So, Honorable Judge, Mr. Judge, I've promoted you, I'm saying Honorable. So please note everything that we're seeing, so that when we are going to have a session with you, you advise the committee correctly, so that we take an informed decision and apply our mind correctly. But we have raised issues that are making us uncomfortable. I'll give to Dr. Modise. Okay.
Thank you, Chairpersons. I think I will just go through the technical questions that we asked earlier, and then some now, but DG will also help me with the strategic one. So just explaining the NMOG process, so the National Macro Reorganization of Government. The presidency is leading on the project, but the Department of Public Administration and Services, DPME, National Treasury, form part of the steering committee. So the deadline for finalization of the movement would be December, but there's two types of movements. There's the function shift, where the Department of Social Development will take some of their functions and give them to the new Department of Women. Then there are departments where they have one minister, but they remain different votes, and then you have other departments that will become one vote. So the changes that can be made faster, those would be put in the adjusted appropriation, and the ones that take longer, then it would be put in the budget. I think the one thing that we omitted to ask the committee, especially in the appropriation bill, is that we request to create empty votes in the appropriation so that it is easy for us to do it in the adjustment appropriation. Because if we don't ask for permission to add these boxes, then we won't be able to do it in the adjustments appropriation. So what we're asking now is look at the appropriation, but also in addition to the ESCOM money that was appropriated, is more of please allow us to create the boxes so that when we come appropriation, we can use the appropriation tool to do the adjustments. So all in all, the deadline is December, but I think as the presidency says, this is the ongoing process, and we will just be working with them and explain to them how our timelines are in terms of the budget process vis-a-vis what they see. But they have given us the deadlines of the 31st of December or somewhere there. So the Department of Planning, Evaluation and Monitoring will have to work with the new departments to do the APPs and align these APPs with the merging of the departments. So that's what the process would be. Then the list of compensation and other issues, Honourable Member, the bill, so when I submitted the presentation, I also included an attachment of the bill itself and the link for the explanatory memorandum as well as additional links in the website. So the information is there, and I think most of it would be in the bill. If you find that the bill doesn't give you sufficient information, please do let me know and I will make a plan in getting the information that you need. The question on the common monetary area, basically that is compensation for the countries that use the South African rand, that Swaziland, Lesotho, Namibia, yes. So those countries, we have to compensate them for using our money. DG, I am going to leave the Nanco asset question to you, but I just want to clarify. So the REFS bill, Chairperson, is in Parliament. So we need the Parliament process to fast-track the bill. So the executive has worked on the bill, the two departments have met, and we've come to present several times just to make sure that the executive is aligned to the proposals of the bill. So what is missing now is the Parliament process. So I think that is what we're missing. Thank you. DG?
Second by.
Second by, thank you. Nanco, maybe let me just take, I think, you know, there was an issue about, you know, not being honest to Parliament. That's the last thing I would want to do. I don't think we have made it clear that that's like, you know, it's like treason. We cannot. We cannot not be honest to Parliament. In the explanation, I indicated to our members that we get information as soon as information is announced that we are going to unbundle and et cetera. It causes shivers in the system at the time when New York, the team is dispersed. And at the time, it's at an indication, explanation point of view to explain what's happening. The teams come back, we are happy. The Chinese indicate that the challenges is exactly that around exchange controls. And we wait because that's been dealt with. And this is not information that we created. What we hear from them. But in the process, then they send the senior delegation to engage with us. Now, I was explaining as to the reasons that they were advancing, over and above just what they would have indicated to us in writing at the time, hopefully, I think it was in writing, that we have issues around exchange control issues. But the engagement in the meeting, we pick up that there are fundamental issues in terms of where ESCOM is going and how it's going. So it's in that explanation that I was trying to make all our members aware, including all members in our conversation. The issue of non-core assets, the former Deputy Minister of Finance should answer this one, as to where we are at with the non-core assets. They are there, they've been identified, there's a number of them. Some of them, as you can imagine, our members have got a component where they are market sensitive. You'll remember the last time we loosely in Parliament started talking about selling ESCOM, I mean Telecom, the next thing, there was almost 40% drop in the Telecom price, and we own 42% of L. So we actually lost value of our own assets by just mentioning and talking about it openly like we did at the time. So we learned the hard lessons. that it's always sometimes easier when you talk about something and you engage with it in a short space of time to get rid of it, and then we can have maximum value in terms of, so because some of them are mean market sensitive. The current example, for instance, we've been talking about Eskom Finance Company, that it's there, it's worth anything between maybe 9 and 12 billion rand. It's a loan book that you must just sell to somebody and we get the money. But by more talking about it, obviously the price obviously is price sensitive, etc. So the key question for us, I think, our members, we have the list. Departments, what we've done also, it's like you asking techies to vote for Christmas. That's what we did. That's the mistake we did. I wrote to all my counterparts in the whole of government. I said to them, indicate what's non-core for you. Now, you can imagine, you wouldn't get any honest. Because people say, no, this is important for us. It's not non-core. It's still core in our business. So there is a process that the executive has instructed us to embark on in terms of identifying this. And it's also in our interest, by the way, to get rid of them. And we have said that we're still committed to that in the 1920 financial year, non-core assets will be disposed of. Some of them are buildings, some of them is land, prime land, etc., that we just have to gather. But I guess it's at that point where we are not ready as yet. And the Minister of Finance, by the way, was almost ready to announce, but through other processes and in February budget, we were asked to do more work by the executive at the time. So they have been identified, but not all. But there's also a process that we are undertaking. The Honourable Peter did raise some questions. It's always an issue as to, do you really need national treasury officials in these boards? Because what happens is, as much as we would love that they become treasury officials to represent the interest of treasury, but think about the Companies Act. As soon as they get in there, their obligations in terms of fiduciary responsibilities and them as board members. And then in that way, the only value that they add would be to understand the inner workings of government in terms of what they bought, would have announced or wanted to do at that point in time, to question against. But then they cease in a way to really become or put on hands as National Treasury officials, and then the collective and one voice against 15 other people. Forget it; it doesn't work. You can scream, but if the board decided the majority, then your treasury, small treasury voice, would not matter. Then what then happens is, as soon as this particular board member is unhappy about a decision that was taken, I get a call immediately and say, this board is going to do A, B, C, do something, and then that's when we start writing letters and threatening the board or threatening the entity, etc. It doesn't work sometimes. But the unfortunate thing is that it's also important that the board are brought on into confidence in terms of where government is going generally. Because in that way, it makes it easy for decisions to be made. I'm not defending the product decision, but I'm just explaining as to what we would normally do under circumstances like those. All we do is that we are not approaching some of these cuts or reprioritizing in a reckless manner. Clear cases of underspending, we actually are the first people to put our hands on that kitty. Because it's not spent anyway, it's all spent somewhere. In some cases, programs are not well thought through, and we can demonstrate, we can put up exactly the plaza performance in the last 5 years, etc., in terms of its financial position, etc. We can put it out so that we demonstrate that we actually went into there to really make sure that money that's not just lying. I mean, at some point they had 17 billion rand in surplus. I don't know what the latest number is now, but it's in billions, so it's not small numbers that we're talking about. So money can be then deployed differently. Whether, now, in terms of Sandral and whether taking, we take on our, Zolani is clear, we take that, we obviously have to internalize that, and the process obviously will have to assist us in terms of how to look at NATO versus NATO. Because I know cases in point where various, including Sandral themselves, including players in the space, would come to us and say, we have got challenges where roads are not being proper, money is not available. Now, as to whether in future that money will be made available, It's a process, again, that's subject to MTEC process, the cabinet Mincom, but that decides whether to bring back the money. But in some cases, we actually, you know, don't forget that we took money. We want to always remember that we took money, and if need be, we need to return it when the budget process allows us. But again, in the context of where there's no money, it's not always easy. I don't know, Chair, if we're leaving any question unanswered.
I think your colleague at the back wants to make an addition to your response.
Honourable Chair, if I could just answer one or two very quick questions on social development and health. So the functions that are shifting to provinces are the substance abuse treatment grant, the social worker employment grant, and the food relief. The first two were conditional grants. The third was announced by the national department. These are fully discussed with provinces for a long time. They know about these. They were conditional grants before. They want them. So these are not unfunded mandates. The reduced grant requirements, which one member was concerned about, the 500 million rand reduction in social grants, is also not a concern from our point of view, because we at the same time added 3 billion in the outer year, because the numbers of beneficiaries are growing by about 200,000 in the outer year. So we added 3 billion, but there's still some delays in the implementation of the extended child support grant, which created some saving in the first year. So there's no cuts in that actually, it's just an adjustment. Also, the shift from CPS to post offices saved 500 million a year, which is a 1.5 billion savings, which is really excellent. So that actually frees up money for elsewhere. We are still hoping that some of that money can be used to subsidize a free withdrawal for grant beneficiaries. DSD and SASA are still thinking about that. That money's been also held back a bit for a while they're thinking about it, but that's something that we'll still have to see how that evolves. Just on health, the 247 million honourable member is for the first year for Limpopo academic. It's not for the medicines state pharmaceutical company. We spend 18 billion rand a year on medicines. The medicine budget is growing quite strongly. The interesting thing about medicine manufacturing at the moment, right now, the issue under discussion is BioVac, because the immunization tender is going out, and so it'll be interesting to see if BioVac wins part of that tender or not. But we haven't heard from DTI recently on the state pharmaceutical company, so that's a discussion for another day. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to hand over or allow... Oh, you wanted to speak as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Two technical points. Okay.
There was a question from the honourable member from the EFF who asked about the sanitation. So it's also because the committee is new, there's a whole set of documents. This book explains the symbol. So there's also a division of revenue bill in which the outputs for the money is also listed. So that's all I wanted to say. For the split latrines, for this financial year, it's 717 schools who will have their split latrines eradicated.
Thank you very much. DM, it's your time.
On a lighter note, when the DG was talking about conversations with the investors outside, and one of the investors was asking, is my money safe? He was simply saying, is my money safe? But it came across as like, is my money? it came across like, is my money safe? My money safe? So it's... I think there was a question or concern raised by Honourable Zolwane about the request for budget adjustment, special adjustment in particular. I think the concern is valid. Under normal circumstances, you will want to have at least one adjustment, which is provided for. You don't want to have two
true adjustment in a financial year, because it creates credibilities insofar as your budgeting processes are concerned. So that concern is genuine, and it's well taken. However, under these circumstances, which is allowed in terms of law, we are facing a huge problem, which is Eskom, and I think the DG has gone to town in basically explaining why it is important for us to do this special adjustment, in which we're going to do another one through a special appropriation bill, which the minister will basically provide. Because I think for us, if I was the chief commander in chief and say, please ask me which war should you declare, I would say all patriots, South Africans, if we're to fight any war, this is the war. It's Eskom, it's a big problem that we basically have. So it's a matter of choice that we've got to come to you and ask for a special appropriation. It's just out of the necessity, out of the dire situation we are in. And of course, I think the concerns are well taken, that we can't just be pouring money into Eskom. We've got to come back with a clear plan on how we turn the situation around. There was an issue raised by, I think, Honorable Dennis. I think it's Dennis, which was asking, and I hope you were asking it on a lighter note, because the question was, is the money to assist Eskom going to come from quantitative easing? The answer, no. Is there an intention to do so? The answer, it's no. Partly because, the Reserve Bank, in terms of the quantitative easing, the Reserve Bank, we respect its independence, it's enshrined in the Constitution. It chooses which instruments to use to basically deal with the monetary policy. They use interest repo rates, reserve ratio rates, including quantitative easing. Now, if the question is asked to me on whether do the conditions for deploying quantitative easing are applicable in South Africa, the answer for me is no. Because where the quantitative easing were used in the global north in particular, the interest rates were zero. And it was precisely because they'd use all the instruments, the monetary policy instruments, repo rates, reserve ratio rate, and they were not working. And they deployed the quantitative easing instrument. And in our case, the interest rates are not zero, and the issue is that we have not exhausted all the monetary policy instruments that we have to deal with our own monetary policy situation. And I think it's important that, yes, there were instances that I said where the quantitative easing instrument was used in the U.S. It produced good results under those circumstances. In Southern Sudan, the instrument was used in a very crude way and it generated a lot of inflation. Government said, no, we need money, and they said, Reserve Bank issue bonds, and they did that, and after that they said, no, we're going straight to the bank now and ask the bank to print money, and the bank printed money, and the inflation was 80% in Southern Sudan. So I'm saying this, and I'm not sure whether you're asking it seriously or you were asking us on where we stand on this debate. I can see you're not asking it seriously, but that is a serious answer that you would like to give you. Chair, having said that, I think we and it's one debate I have privately with the chair on this quantitative easing matter. So. But the debate will go on outside this forum. That's the view that some of us hold. I think, Chair, we really appreciate the comments, and we will
improve on the areas where we need to improve, and I think we'll continuously engage the committee on these matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, DM, on that note. And let me take this opportunity to thank all the members, the officials, and want to appreciate the spirit at which we engage each other, and let's continue with that spirit to move South Africa together forward. And Honorable Ryder, my expectation, and I did say it, after the minister has spoken, nobody is allowed to speak. But because I'm too kind today, and I just decided to be like my former chair, my personal chair, Karim, I'll allow you to speak, but not make a speech. Just comment.
Chair, thank you. Yes, I won't undermine it, and I appreciate your indulgence. Merely a request, because this is our first meeting, if we can have the attendance register circulated so we can have each other's contact details going forward, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. The attendance register with the contact details of all the members. Can the secretariat deal with that? Of the guests? Okay. I think it's for good intentions. Eh? Thank you very much. The secretary will forward those contacts to you. Thank you. Have a good evening.
I'm sure you will.
Thank you.
Till next time.
Yeah. Waiting for a Sunday paper. I don't know if I'll be able to.